Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1999. Jewish Democracy.
Hello. Well, there's been another dragging. This one just last week in Martin, South Dakota. Three Indians from a reservation there severely beat a white man, 21-year-old Brad Young, tied a rope around his neck into the back of their pickup truck, and dragged the white man until they thought he was dead. Then they cut the rope loose from their truck and drove off, leaving their unconscious and badly injured victim lying in a field where he was later found. His ears had been torn off, and his face and neck were so badly lacerated that his family couldn't recognize him. The sheriff, noting the viciousness of the attack and that the victim was white and his attackers were Indians, told reporters that it was clearly a hate crime. The fascinating thing about this particular incident is that it is practically a mirror image of the dragging of a black by three white men in Jasper, Texas last year. Three white men and a black victim in the first case, three Indians and a white victim in the second case. In both cases, the victims had known and been drinking with their assailants. Both draggings were unplanned and simply grew out of drunken fights. In both cases, a beating preceded the dragging. The really interesting difference between the Jasper, Texas case and the Martin, South Dakota case is the way in which the controlled news media have responded to them. The Jasper, Texas case was immediately on television screens around the world and remained on the screens for months. It periodically comes back on the TV screens as the deliberately spaced trials of the three perpetrators come up. Bill Clinton addressed the nation about it. Every Jewish propaganda organization and every politically correct columnist and commentator had something to say about it. But unless you're an internet news junkie or a very careful newspaper reader, you haven't even heard about the Martin, South Dakota case. You certainly will never see it on television or hear Bill Clinton comment on it. In the South Dakota case, the media people have been trying to pressure the sheriff into backing down from his initial assertions that the dragging was a hate crime. Since the victim knew his assailants and was voluntarily drinking with them before they beat and dragged him, it wasn't really a hate crime, the media people have been saying. It was simply a bit of drunken hooliganism that got out of hand. You know, they could have said exactly the same thing about the Texas case, but they didn't, did they? In Texas, their motivation was to exaggerate the atrociousness and malice involved, not to minimize it, as they have done in the South Dakota case. And for real media minimalization, consider the dragging murder of Patricia Stansfield by a black near Streator, Illinois, on August 1st last year. I reported this dragging to you nearly 3 months ago in my broadcast of June 12th. The 46-year-old white woman, a registered nurse, was deliberately dragged 3 miles to her death along a country road. Police found blood spots, body tissue, and bits of her clothing along the road. Sounds a bit like the dragging of James Byrd in Jasper, doesn't it? With all of those little painted circles on the road, which we saw 100 times on television. Patricia Stansfield's black murderer was 26-year-old Christopher Coleman. But you haven't even heard the slightest peep from the Jewish media about the Stansfield dragging, have you? You might ask, why couldn't the media simply have presented the facts in each case, giving them approximately equal coverage, and let the public make up their own minds and form their own opinions about them? Well, we all know the answer to that question, don't we? The controlled media are not interested in presenting facts. They are interested in shaping public opinion. So they present the facts which serve their purpose, but not those facts which don't. We have three atrocious interracial draggings in the past 15 months, one with a black victim and two with white victims. Even if you didn't already know, you wouldn't have to puzzle very long trying to figure out which one the controlled media would choose to report. You know, even when the facts don't fit, the Jews sometimes will try to use them anyway. The media liars still refer to the two killers at Columbine High School this summer as neo-Nazis and racists. They know that one of the killers, Dylan Klebold, was a Jew, and that both were not racists, but rather were anti-racists. They know that Eric Harris had an internet website in which he talked about how much he hated white racists. Now, those facts don't fit the image the Jews have been forging in the public mind of people who go on shooting sprees as being white racists or neo-Nazis. But they couldn't really suppress the story of the Columbine High murders like they did the story of the dragging murder of Patricia Stansfield. The Columbine High story was too big to kill, so they just twisted it a bit. They repeated over and over the rumor that the two killers had targeted blacks, even though only one of the 13 people they killed was a black. They parlayed this false rumor about targeting blacks into the characterization of the two killers as neo-Nazis. And the general public, never too difficult to fool, has swallowed it. At least much of the general public has swallowed it, and most of the rest are such lemmings that even if they don't literally believe the Jewish party line on racial matters, they pretend that they do. They are afraid of being out of step with everyone else. They are the ones who understand the danger and the unpleasantness of living with non-whites, but who won't admit that they understand. They flee to white suburbs or to whiter parts of the country to get away from non-whites, but they'll never give you a straight answer about why they fled. Maybe it's a good thing that we're running out of places to flee to, and soon we'll be obliged to stand and fight. At least some of us will stand and fight. Many will just grovel and beg for mercy. That's the kind of white people we've been raising in America for the past 50 years. I have a story on my desk about a murder in Salt Lake City last month. I suspect that this is a story you haven't heard before because, like so many others, it doesn't fit. Early on the morning of August 3rd, a black male slipped into a condominium where three young white women were sleeping. He stabbed one of the young women, 22-year-old Amy Quentin, to death, and tried to kill 19-year-old Erin Warren by stabbing her in the stomach. Erin was taken to a hospital in critical condition. The third woman, in a separate bedroom, was able to telephone police and escaped injury. You know, this sort of thing happens all the time. You just don't hear about it. What I found especially poignant about this story was the reaction of one of the girl's neighbors. Bill McDade lives in the apartment just above the one in which the girls were attacked. He's 41 years old, and he moved from Southern California to Salt Lake City with his elderly father several years ago to escape the non-white crime in California. He told reporters, "We moved up here from L.A. to escape this kind of thing. When I moved here, it was very peaceful, very quiet, and very serene, but now it has gotten worse." He sighed and said that maybe now he would have to move again. Well, here we are, the descendants of the pioneers who fought the Indians, conquered America, and built a white civilization on this continent. Here we are at the end of the millennium, just running, 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 afraid to fight, afraid even to name our enemies. It certainly looks as if both the moral and physical quality of white Americans has declined during the last couple of hundred years. We really need to think seriously about the ways in which we can improve the breed when we move into the next millennium. But of course, our plight today is a consequence of more than bad breeding. It is, to a very large degree, the consequence of psychological manipulation. I've said this to you 100 times, but I'll say it again now, because it is the single most salient fact of our present situation. Whoever controls the mass media of news and entertainment is able to control most of the public's perception of what is fashionable in ideas, in policy, in behavior. And for most of the public, the perception of what is fashionable determines what they say and do, and to a large extent, what they think. And in a democracy where people who are easily manipulated by the media are committed to vote, whoever controls the mass media also controls the government for all practical purposes. I'll give you a very specific example of the way in which this works. Every listener certainly remembers Buford Furrow's shooting spree in Los Angeles on August 10th. The way the controlled media have harped on his non-lethal foray into the Jewish community center there, it'll be a long time before anyone forgets Buford Furrow. Well, of course, all of the publicity attracted politicians, the way a candle attracts other types of insects. They smelled votes. And one of these vote-sniffing politicians was California's governor, Gray Davis. He noted the publicity. He noted the hysterical reaction of various minority groups and women's groups and lemming groups. He saw an opportunity to win votes and a pat on the head from the media masters at the same time. He focused on the fact that Buford Furrow was characterized by the media as a hater, that Furrow had belonged to a politically incorrect church in Idaho, which the Jews have labeled a hate group. Last week, Governor Davis called a press conference and announced that California needs new laws, quote, to fight hate groups. He said that he was appointing a panel to study ways in which California's laws might be used to impose civil or criminal penalties on so-called hate groups, their leaders, and their members. He wants, he said, to, quote, curtail the unlawful acts of these dangerous bigots, end quote. That's worrisome talk. I believe that the police, the courts, and everyone else concerned already have figured out how to impose civil or criminal penalties on people who shoot other people, whether the shooters have been labeled by the media as dangerous bigots or not. Laws covering that sort of thing have been on the books for a long time. What Governor Davis's talk suggests to me is that he would like to punish people not so much for committing a crime as for having the wrong beliefs, going to the wrong church, having the wrong friends. That is, for falling into the dangerous bigot category. His comments suggest that he believes that the laws should be applied differently to so-called dangerous bigots than they are to politically correct people. He wants his panel to study ways of getting around the First Amendment guarantees of freedom of religion, freedom of association, and freedom of speech. He sniffs a willingness of the lemmings to give up these freedoms in response to the media-generated hysteria, and he's eager to show that he's willing too. I suppose that the most worrisome thing of all about this talk by Governor Davis of finding ways to impose penalties on dangerous bigots is the question of who decides who's a dangerous bigot and who's not. And I suspect that most of you already know who it is that makes decisions of that sort. Governor Davis doesn't make those decisions. The police don't make them. The courts don't make them. Jewish so-called human rights organizations, such as the Simon Wiesenthal Center, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and the mob-affiliated Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rit, working together with the Jewish media bosses, decide who's a dangerous bigot. And whatever the Jews decide, that is A-OK with Governor Davis, who understands which side his bread is buttered on. But you know, this is not what the Founding Fathers had in mind when they made a revolution against King George's government and fought the Redcoats in order to secure the blessings of liberty to themselves and their posterity. Our ancestors did not fight in the American Revolution and give us a constitution so that Bill Clinton wannabes like Gray Davis can trash it in order to garner the votes of lemmings and please their Jewish paymasters. I know that there are lots of ordinary folks out there who don't really want to abolish the Constitution, but they have let themselves be stampeded by the media into the belief that we really do need to accept some new limitations on our liberty in order to protect little children from crazed haters like Buford Furrow. These folks are not deep thinkers, and they're easily distracted by media sleight of hand. They are convinced now that people like Buford Furrow are the principal threat to little children and others because that's all they hear about. They're also convinced that all of the outrage about Furrow they're hearing from media spokesmen is genuine. They don't have a clue as to what the true agenda of the media bosses is. But let me tell you, it isn't to protect little children from crazed killers. Consider this. On May 3rd, 3 months before Buford Furrow shot up the Jewish Community Center, killing no one, a man named Stephen Abrams deliberately rammed his Cadillac into a crowd of children on the playground of a preschool in Costa Mesa, California, just a few miles from the Jewish Community Center visited by Buford Furrow. Abrams spotted the children on the playground of the South Coast Early Childhood Learning Center as he drove past in his Cadillac. He made a U-turn, aimed his Cadillac at the children, and accelerated toward them. He jumped the curb, tore through a chain-link fence, knocked the jungle gym aside, and plowed into the kids. Two of the children, a 4-year-old girl and a 3-year-old boy, were mangled to death under Abrams' car when it roared onto the playground. 5 others were hurt, 2 of them with serious head injuries. When the police arrived, Abrams told them, and I quote, "I was going to execute these children because they were innocent," end quote. I'll repeat Abrams' statement to the police. "I was going to execute these children because they were innocent." Does that sound like Abrams is dangerous or not? You know, Abrams' murderous assault on the South Coast Early Childhood Learning Center did make the newspapers for about a day, and then it was quietly dropped. No breathless coverage on national television, no interviews with spokesmen from the Anti-Defamation League, no televised comments from Mr. Clinton. I'll bet you don't even remember reading about it. The Jewish media bosses weren't really interested in it. Governor Davis didn't interrupt his golf to comment on it. I mean, the school wasn't a Jewish school or a black school, and a firearm wasn't used, so what's the point in making a big fuss about it? How's that going to help us get rid of the First and Second Amendments? And besides, when the murderer has a name like Abrams, the less said about it, the better. I'm sure that you get my point here. All of the outrage we're hearing from the media and the politicians about Buford Furrow isn't genuine. These people aren't really interested in protecting little children from dangerous nuts. The media bosses don't care about little children. They do care about disarming and silencing the public. They don't want dissent, and they don't want firearms in the hands of dissidents. And they are able to keep the couch potatoes and the lemmings hypnotized, which is why the politicians like Governor Gray Davis dance to their tune. What all of this amounts to is a disgusting caricature of civilized government. It's a preview of democracy in the 21st century, as the Jews would like it to be. At the top, a Jewish string pullers and media bosses and money men. At the bottom, a degraded and easily manipulated electorate of sports fans and hereditary lemmings. And in between, a class of thoroughly corrupt and amoral politicians and bureaucrats to front for the Jewish elite and help keep the electorate in line. One of the most interesting aspects of our situation is that a number of white Americans who don't fall into any of these classes more or less understand these things, but they don't do anything about them. They keep up with what's happening even when it doesn't appear on network television. They think about these things, but only in a personal context. They don't worry about what these things are doing to the country or to the race, but only about how they themselves are affected. They try to adapt to this Jewish democracy in a way that will be beneficial to themselves. They are not corrupt in the same sense, or at least not to the same degree, as the politicians and the bureaucrats, but they have abdicated their responsibilities as white Americans. And they are dangerously short-sighted if they believe that they can separate their own fate, their own destiny, their own well-being from that of their people. My reason for saying that this abdication of responsibility is short-sighted is this. It's not just that here in America we have a disgusting caricature of a civilized society. America's sickness is spreading out and affecting much of the rest of the world. And much of the rest of the world is quite concerned and quite unhappy about that. In the remaining time today, I'll mention only the example of Serbia's Kosovo province. Unfortunately, exactly what I predicted back during Madeleine Albright's bombing of Serbia has come true. The ethnic cleansing of Serb civilians in Kosovo began as soon as the Clinton gang forced the Serb military and police to leave the province. The NATO occupation forces are not keeping the peace in Kosovo at all. They are simply providing cover for the KLA to run the remaining Serbs out of the province and to murder those who don't run fast enough. The one atrocity committed by the KLA against Serb civilians, which received enough publicity over here to gain the notice of the couch potatoes, was the massacre of 14 Serb farmers 6 weeks ago on July 23rd. That sort of thing, or worse, has been happening every week. Mass graves of Serbs murdered by the KLA since the bombing stopped in mid-June are uncovered every few days. More than 90% of the Serbs who lived in Kosovo in June have now been driven out in terror or have been murdered. More than 90%. Most of the American electorate, most of the lemmings, don't know that. Most of them believe the fairy tales the Clinton administration tells them about peacekeeping in Kosovo. The world, however, doesn't believe these fairy tales. The world can see what is happening. The world understands what America has become. America is seen not only as sick and irrational, but as dangerously sick and irrational. It is not a question of if, but only of when patriots elsewhere will strike in order to safeguard their own nations. Responsible patriots here really shouldn't just sit around and wait for that to happen. Thanks for being with me again today.